there! You are listening to the Conservation Spotlight, a regular segment of Willamette Wake Up on KMUZ Community Radio, 88.5 and 100.7 FM, and streaming at KMUZ.org. This is where Marion and Polk Soil and Water Conservation Districts and OSU Small Farms Program shine a light on partnerships and programs that conserve our beautiful natural resources in the Willamette Valley. We're illuminating our collective mission of conserving soil, water, and natural resources for urban and agricultural audiences in the Willamette Valley.
I am your host, Haley White, Small Farms Outreach Coordinator with OSU Extension in the Polk Soil and Water Conservation District. On this episode, we are talking with Audrey Comerford, the Agritourism Coordinator for OSU Extension in Marion, Polk, and Yamhill Counties. As the Agritourism Coordinator, Audrey helps farmers incorporate agritourism to foster connection with the public and to help build financially viable farms. Today, we will learn about the program, how the community can experience local agriculture, and even hear a bit about Audrey's own farm. Audrey, to start out, for those who may not be familiar, can you tell us exactly what agritourism is?
Absolutely. Agritourism is one of those interesting activities that you may have participated in, but didn't know you were participating in it. So, for example, a harvest festival, going to get your pumpkins in the fall, that's agritourism. Going to U-pick berries, that is agritourism as well. Anytime you're interacting with the farmer, farmland, coming onto the property for either an event or sale of farm products, that is all incorporated in agritourism.
Now, being in the Willamette Valley, we have quite a bit of farmland, so there's a lot of agritourism available for folks.
Yes, we are blessed to be in such a diverse area. You could spend a day going to U-pick berries, go see alpacas on an alpaca farm, go taste wine, cider, or beer at the place where the product was grown and produced. You could go to a flower festival and see botanical gardens, and that's just all in one day. So within a 50-mile radius, we here in the Willamette Valley have a wonderful plethora of agritourism for the public, locals, and visitors alike to enjoy.
Great. That sounds amazing. Now, I heard you mention Oregon State University. How is the university connected into this program?
Absolutely. OSU Extension was approached by the community members in the area, local governing officials, and realized that there was a number of these types of farms in the area that could use support. Some of these farms are large scale, some of them are small, and everything in between. And so my position was identified as one that needed basically to be. So we look at all the pillars of what OSU does to support the community, whether that's research, education, or community engagement. And through those different avenues, we support not only the farming community, but it also sit as a representation for agriculture within the tourism sectors as well.
All right. Now, I heard you mention, you know, there was this need that was identified and the reason for creating this program. Why is agritourism so important, and how can community members get involved?
Absolutely. Well, this is definitely not a new concept. If anybody's ever been to Italy and heard of agriturismo, that idea of interacting where your food and fiber come from, learning, reconnecting with the land. We just happen to have a lot of farms in the area whose business model include selling direct to consumer. And that means the public can go and buy directly from these farms, on farmland a lot of the time, although farmers markets are also considered agritourism. And this sale allows the farmer to potentially charge more for that product than they would through wholesale markets. It builds community connection. It helps with educating the public about agriculture and farming. We know, you know, less and less of us are directly tied to farming, and so that the education piece is extremely important. When you go and buy from these farms, you're possibly allowing them to support an additional family member or community member to be employed on that farm, part or full time. There's a lot of benefits. And so I always recommend folks, if you're looking for something particular, something that you feel probably could be grown in our area, see if there's a farm that's selling it. Buying directly from them sometimes could literally make their day. Plus, you get some of the freshest, most wholesome food and fiber produced right here directly from the farm to you.
That's a pretty great deal. I mean, who doesn't love visiting a pumpkin patch or a Yupik berry farm? But on top of the fun experience, you're supporting local farms in our local community.
Absolutely. And we saw how the community foods systems broke down during the COVID-19 pandemic, and being able to find your local produce, meats, all of those types of things closer to home, I think will be very important moving forward.
Definitely. I know you mentioned a few local examples, but, you know, as we're starting to approach fall, the harvest season, are there other options of farms that are more unique or maybe aren't as obvious as a Yupik farm or pumpkin patch in the fall?
Yeah, we have lots of great examples of farms that have different product. And while food is important, it's not the only thing. So, you know, the obvious example is the pumpkin patches that are coming up. Our area is also known for our beautiful Christmas trees. So if you've ever gone and cut your own Christmas tree on a farm, you are participating in agritourism. But there's a lot of other sectors, too. I mentioned earlier there's alpaca farms. You can go and walk an alpaca through Great Oaks outside of Amity area at Wings and a Prayer Alpaca. There's a lot of sheep and wool, a lot of festivals that take place. But you can actually go to some of these farms at certain times of the year and see how these animals are raised and how the fiber is produced. In August, we'll have a number of farms that'll have sunflower festivals, and those are a lot of fun. Great time to take that family photo you've been wanting, and then maybe pick up some local orchard crops while you're there doing it. So lots of great opportunity coming up here in the late summer into fall.
That's great. Now, how do people find out about these activities?
Absolutely. There's a number of directories that support these types of farms. In our area specifically, there is the Oregon Farm Loop program. Specifically in Marion County, we have the Marion Farm Loop. You can find them online as well as brochures at tourism locations. But the Marion Farm Loop brings together these different farms. And you can visit around, follow the loop around, and pick up some of these local products directly from the farms. We also have great food trails throughout the state. And one of them is located in Polk County under the name Great Oaks Food Trail. That is a fantastic way to visit local food sources, restaurants, farms, for all sorts of family fun activity. If you have relatives coming to visit you, I know mine are starting to travel again after these last 2 years. I always make sure to take them to a number of these farms in the area. Shows off Oregon beautifully. And plus, everybody loves to taste Marion berries. So,
all right, Audrey. Now, we may have a farmer or two tuned in listening to KMUZ Radio and Willamette Wake Up Conservation Spotlight. How can they find more information on the farmer end of if they want to start incorporating some agritourism on their farm?
OSU Extension has a statewide agricultural tourism program. We have a website. And that can you can Google, you know, OSU Extension agritourism, and it will come up. It has a great list of resources for those looking to add agritourism to their farm business, for those that are interested in learning more about it, and maybe want more information on the legal and land use part of agritourism, as well as the team here at OSU has developed an online course specifically for landowners. Who are interested in incorporating some sort of direct consumer sale or events onto their farm. That course is also listed on the website, and it's new as of this last spring. And so we're very excited to be able to have this resource for farmers and landowners to kind of work through the models themselves. It's self-paced, and they can work on their action plan and see how these particular activities fit into their farm business model and maybe sometimes decide that agritourism isn't for them. It's definitely not for everybody. You have to want to open up your space to the public. And so there's a lot of things to think through before jumping right into opening up the farm.
That seems like an excellent resource. I mean, I know farmers are so busy. They're located all over our counties. To be able to have that online, to be able to work through it at their own pace, but then also to have you as a resource in case they have questions. I know you've put up a lot of resources on that website, especially about navigating all the legal or zoning issues. So I know that's really handy for farmers to use.
Yeah, and I'm always available for questions. Everybody's land and situation and products are different. And so really having that conversation with, one of us folks, me in particular, about, the questions you have, and I am able to direct you to certain resources, always happy to do that. One of my favorite things is farm visits. So some of the most creative ideas I have ever seen in marketing do not come from the tourism sector. They come from farmers. And I'm always blown away by the resilience and the persistence. And I love that these farms are able to showcase that to the public.
A quick update if you're just joining us. I'm here with Audrey Comer-Ford, the Agritourism Coordinator for OSU Extension in Marion, Polk, and Yamhill Counties. And you're listening to the Conservation Spotlight, a regular segment of Willamette Wake Up on KMUZ Radio, 88.5 and 100.7 FM, and streaming worldwide on KMUZ.org. All right, Audrey. Now, speaking of farmers, I hate to call you out like this, but you're a farmer yourself, correct?
I am, yes. I do have a small farm that I work and produce, mainly fiber sheep, in the Willamette Valley, in my spare time. Because, all have a lot of that.
Tell us a little more about that. So you raise sheep for wool and fiber. What kind of breeds do you work with? Tell us a little bit more.
Absolutely. I raise primarily Romney sheep, primarily natural colored, specifically for the wool, although we do some locker as well. The farm business name is Wee Woolies Fiber Arts, and it actually came about from a art class I took as an artist in residence in high school many years ago. And I worked with wool doing needle felted items. And I absolutely hated it at first. I thought, why are we working with wool? What is the purpose? This is not a sweater. I don't understand. But by the end of those 2 weeks, I was able to create my first design. And I haven't looked back since. And so I always say that fiber arts can escalate into owning your own flock of sheep. I have a small flock of about 15. We raise lambs, we shear a couple of times a year and process the fleeces, send them out into all sorts of things such as roving, washed wool, yarn, all of those types of things.
All right. Now you mentioned natural fiber. Does that mean you just leave them and you don't dye them like hot pink or purple? Just leave them natural color? What does that mean?
Well, we always love to dye them hot pink. That's always fun. And if anybody can come up with a genetically perfect hot pink sheep that just naturally produces that, I'm in the market. But my sheep primarily are anything but white. So I do have a few white, and while that is a color, I primarily focus on the grays, the browns, variegations, those types of things. And so most people, going back to the agritourism and general public, are surprised that not all sheep are white. And so the fact that I get to sell my product directly to consumers and educate them about, no, this is actually the color the wool grows. Isn't it beautiful? You can take these four colors and do a color work pattern or a knitting pattern with no dye involved. That's always a lot of fun. And I've seen the benefit of selling these products directly to my customers rather than the wholesale market. I would get much less money per fleece if I was doing it wholesale versus selling it directly to these hand spinners or folks that are also working with the wool. So I've seen the financial and the educational benefit of being able to interact with the public directly with agriculture.
Now, so you have lambs, you have a farm, you sell wool products, but you also mentioned fiber art. So are you knitting items? Tell us a little bit more. You mentioned needle felting. I'd like to hear more about that side of.
Yeah, absolutely. So Fiber arts incorporate a lot of things when you're working with wool or some sort of fiber product. And so I primarily do needle felting, which is this crazy voodoo technique using special needles and wool and felting very similar to how you would see a wet felted garment, except for I don't use any water or soap. So it's all dry. It's done with a specific needle. It's agitating the fibers, locking them together. It's a lot of fun. It's a little weird to watch at first, but that's how I use my farm product and sell it. So I'm doing a value-added process.
That's so cool. It's very neat. All right. Now, we've had a few different farmers on Conservation Spotlight so far, and I always ask, what are some of the biggest challenges you've experienced as a local farmer?
I would say marketing can be challenging. For me, I did not come from a livestock farming background. Mine was mainly in horticulture and crops, row crops. So it was that learning aspect. And I myself turned to Extension to learn some things when I was looking at purchasing my first breeding ewes for my flock. I also made connections with other local farms that were doing similar things. And that's the wonderful thing I've seen is that farmer-to-farmer connection is just so important and so valuable. And I think the more that we as Extension folks can create that atmosphere and bring these producers together and have them learn from each other and us being facilitators, I think that's going to be extremely important moving forward.
Great. And now on the opposite side of a challenge, what do you enjoy most about the work that you do? And, you know, you work in agritourism, but also on your own farm.
I enjoy being able to know where my product that I'm working with comes from. I started off doing these fiber arts needle felting by buying from other local producers, which is always fun. But there's an amazing satisfaction about working with a fleece that was from the sheep, that was the first one born on your property, that you had to pull out, that you had to help give veterinary care, and now it's one of your matriarchs of your flock and produces phenomenal fiber every year, and just knowing the story of that animal. And let me tell you, at times of year, they eat way better than I do. So being able to feel that connection has been extremely important. And I think that translates then into the work. I believe in farming. I believe in agriculture. I believe in these small farms, these family farms. And to see them have that same type of connection with the products that they grow and their history on their piece of land and being able to share that with the public, that's why I do the work I do with OSU Extension, is to be able to support counties full of these types of farms.
Now that really segues nicely into my next question, Audrey. Do you have any advice you'd like to share for anyone thinking about getting into agritourism?
Do your research. I know a lot of folks think that they can, because this is their land, they're farming it, they can just open it and do whatever they want. Unfortunately, that's not the case. Oregon has a number of land use and land zoning restrictions, especially on EFU or exclusive farm use zoned land. There are some state laws that apply, but they are determined and permitted by the county, some of them. Some of them are outright uses, such as UPICs. But definitely doing your research to what is and is not permitted and what all is incorporated into agricultural tourism. Do you like working with the public? Are you comfortable with them on your land? Do you want people contacting you, asking questions, not understanding that maybe there's not Oregon strawberries in November, and why would that be? And so there's a lot of things to think through, to research before deciding to go ahead and invest, because it is a time and a financial investment to add these agritourism activities. Which is part of the reason why we developed the basic online course, was to give folks an area to work through, whether that be through the legal, risk management, marketing, customer service, all of those types of things. So lots to consider. I don't like to deter anyone, but again, it's not necessarily for everyone.
Now, you mentioned doing your research. Where are some good kind of first steps, places to look for that information for zoning or land use laws?
Yeah, so knowing what zone your land that you're working on farming is zoned, that's very important. Looking at your county regulations and then talking to your county planning department. I always, you know, recommend making an appointment, contacting your county planning department with some sort of plan, some sort of written up plan about how these agritourism on farm activities supports your farming operation. We never say that they're going to take the place of farming because agritourism is supposed to support your farm business. It's supposed to be a marketing effort, a additional revenue stream, but it can't be your sole business. And so really thinking through how maybe having an open barn day is going to allow you to sell more products and to educate your customers so they'll come back and buy from you in the future. Or maybe how having a, you know, sunflower festival like we talked about earlier will provide that that marketing effort. So lots of things to consider. But like I said earlier, I am always available for questions, especially if you have this one particular question and those online search engines are getting you nowhere. I can at least point you in the right direction.
What's some advice you would offer someone thinking about starting their own small farm?
Well, I'm going to go back to doing your research. When I jumped in, I knew about 30% of what it was actually going to take to be able to raise even just a small flock of sheep. I knew I needed certain things. I had not considered others. And so I think talking to other farmers and ranchers in your area that produce something similar to what you're looking at is great. I made connections that made me think about, oh, what am I going to do when this happens? For example, in our sheep industry, getting a shearer, somebody to shear your sheep if you're not going to do it yourself. It's getting harder and harder to find them. Another example along the same lines is mills for your the fiber. Getting your fleeces, whether that be sheep, alpaca, natural, any of it, is getting harder and harder. The infrastructure is lacking. So thinking that through and thinking, if I don't have these certain supporting markets, supporting infrastructure for my business, how am I going to be able to structure this so I'm able to produce either a value-added product or even the raw product? So research and building those connections and knowing your sales markets as well. Who are you going to sell to? If it's not going to be directly to a consumer, what wholesale markets are out there? Are you going to sell to restaurants? If there's another, you know, pandemic or shutdown and you lose that market, how are you going to pivot? So thinking through certain scenarios.
Now, this question we ask at the end of each episode to all of our interviewees, what is your favorite Oregon critter and your favorite outdoor space?
Well, this is such a great question because I think it could really speak to somebody's personality. And since I can't say sheep because we've already talked about that so much, you know, I've always been fascinated by things that I don't understand, and something I don't understand is ocean and ocean ecology. And so I've always loved orcas. And so we have a few resident orca whales off the coast of Oregon. And so I have always loved going and watching. And I just think their social and structural behavior is just fascinating. And so I guess that kind of goes along with my favorite outdoor space. I love our coastline. And I don't mean, while it's lovely, I don't mean the larger cities on the coast. I mean our rugged, rocky, wild coastline. And so I think sitting at a place on the Central Coast and being able to look out to a space that you know there's animals in life, but you can't necessarily see because it's just this flat water. And then all of a sudden being able to see, you know, one of our resident or transient whales is just, it's just fascinating to me.
Well, Audrey, I'm lucky enough to get to work with you as a colleague on a regular basis, but I did want to express my gratitude. Thanks for being here. I sure enjoy chatting with you, and I bet the people on the radio are fascinated as well.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Of course. Now we'll have to get out and you pick some berries. I know we have some local creameries, too, so maybe some of that sounds delicious. I've been talking with Audrey Comerford, the Agritourism Coordinator for OSU Extension in Marion, Polk, and Yamhill Counties. And I'm your host, Haley White, Small Farms Outreach Coordinator with OSU Extension and the Polk Soil and Water Conservation District. Thank you for taking a few minutes to share the light with us. We are grateful for a community of conservation-minded folks who know the importance of partnerships. If you would like more information on this topic, please visit our websites, extension.oregonstate.edu or polkswcd.com, and our Facebook pages for follow-up information. And if you liked what you heard here on the Conservation Spotlight, tune in next month to KMUZ at 100.7 or 88.5 FM, the third Wednesdays during Willamette Wake Up. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk soon.